From WYPR, I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. The Baltimore Neighborhood Indicators Alliance keeps tabs on the health of the city's communities with statistics, the same way your doctor monitors your blood work and other measures. Seema Iyer of the Jacob France Institute at the University of Baltimore says no neighborhood can afford to ignore numbers that show how many of its residents have long commutes to work, how many of its buildings stand vacant, and how diverse its housing stock is.
So that people of different incomes would choose housing at different price points. And if we have diversity in every single one of our neighborhoods, what our research has shown is it's the best educational outcomes for children.
Plus, a new interactive map harnesses statistics for the arts. It's On the Record after the news.
You're listening to On the Record, the podcast, a service of your public radio, 88.1 WYPR. Find more podcasts online at wypr.org. And tell us what you think. Send an email to ontherecord@wypr.org.
Good morning, I'm Sheila Cast. We're On the Record. In the news business, there's a constant tension between telling the individual story and outlining the overall trend. I'm not talking about fake news. I'm talking about the choices reporters and especially editors make constantly between highlighting the drama and emotion of one person or one family's experience and the data that can tell a deeper but sometimes drier story of how a whole community is changing over time. Ideally, the drama and the data work together, but on deadline, often there's not an ideal match. Seema Iyer's work gives journalists like me a reason not to give up on data. Iyer has devoted most of the last two decades to ferreting out the data that tell the real stories of what's going on in Baltimore and its many neighborhoods. She is the driving force behind the Baltimore Neighborhood Indicators Alliance, which is part of the Jacob France Institute in the University of Baltimore's Merrick School of Business. Welcome.
Thank you, Sheila. Thanks for having me.
So this spring, you issued Vital Signs 15, which is a deep dive into the data that describes 55 neighborhoods and communities that comprise the city of Baltimore. What do people learn from Vital Signs?
It's the same thing that I tell people when you go to your own doctor's office. When you get your vital signs with the blood work, you're looking to make sure that your physiology is in balance, that your vitamin D levels are on track, your iron levels are on track. And through medical research, we've identified what your good hemoglobin levels should be. And if they're not in range, if your iron is not in range, you know that you're going to have potentially a hard time with energy levels. Now, the direct relationship between those things are a medically researched phenomenon. But for me, what do I care? I'm going to take my iron supplement, right? So if my iron supplement, if my iron levels are low, I'm going to try and do something about it that I can kind of get it back into range. And so that's exactly what we do every year for communities. We have a battery of basically tests. It's 150 indicators for every community in the city of Baltimore that mean different snippets of information about a neighborhood. And when you combine them together, that represents kind of the issues that might be happening in a place. So I tell everybody the data is not what the community is, but the data reflects the physiology of a place. Same way your vital signs are not who you are when you go to the doctor's office. Your blood work is not who you are, but they do impact what you can and cannot do in sometimes ways that you don't even realize.
So give me an example of, over these years, what some community has done that's analogous to you deciding to take your iron pill. How has a community used something that you've ferreted out?
Over the last 15 years, one rather simple indicator that communities very much understand is a critical indicator to track is how many days, if you put your house on the market, what's the average number of days that a house stays on the market? Because that's a sign that if it goes up, you know, from 1 year to the next, if it goes from a month on the market to 2 months to 3 months, that's a sign potentially that the demand for your overall neighborhood, even if your house is fantastic, might be working against you. And so just days on the market is something that every community tracks to make sure that the days on the market is not too high above the citywide average, not going in a higher level than average for the rest of their communities in their area, and what can they do to bring that rate back down. Nobody wants their house to be on the market forever. It's a nightmare. And so that's something that communities can do to take, you know, control of something in their neighborhood.
Later, I want to ask you about a new tool and an interactive map you're unveiling tomorrow to feature arts and culture. So aside from that, what is new in Vital Signs 15?
The biggest new thing that we worked on this year was around the issue of tax lien sales. We worked with a coalition of a group headed up by the Community Law Center and concerned citizens that really wanted to track how many properties in their neighborhood were being put up for auction on the tax lien sales process.
Refresh us on what a tax lien is.
So a tax lien is when taxes have not been paid on a property, and the city will then rustle up. Every year we get a tax bill in July 1st, and by March of the following year, if it hasn't been paid, it will be put up on a list of delinquent tax properties. And property owners are given about 2 months to try and do something about it. And if by May they haven't paid those taxes, the remaining properties will go up for what's called tax lien sale. And for many people in some of our neighborhoods, that could potentially lead to a vacant property because the owners that are in that property right now will potentially have to walk away from that property. And whoever bought the tax lien sale then can try and acquire that property through the tax lien sale process. So we're working with a coalition of advocates to reform the tax lien sale process in the city of Baltimore. But first, we have to even know kind of what the problem is in all of our neighborhoods. And so that's a new indicator for us this year.
Vital Signs 15 analyzes data from 2015, and you found that the city's racial diversity index increased slightly. What is that, and what does that mean?
The other big new thing that's in this particular report is that we've been able to look at intercensal data. So normally you only get data from the 2010 census or the 2000 census, and we would have to wait for 2020 census. But starting in the last decade, the Census Bureau has been putting out every year what's called the American Community Survey. This is a new survey that they put out starting in about 2007. And so in 2015 was the first time that we were able to look at demographic changes between now and 2010. And there have been a lot of changes in some of our neighborhoods with respect to population growth and demographic change. So racial diversity index is a calculation that measures the probability that you pick two people at random in any neighborhood, what's the probability that they're of a different race or ethnicity? And it went up a little bit between 2010 and 2015. And it's certainly gone up since 2000.
And is that more true? I presume that is more true in some parts of the city than others.
Yes, definitely true in some parts of the city than others. And we identified, so there's a couple of data points for the nation that nationally, by 2020, all children under 18 will be no majority one race. There's so many different ethnic groups aside from white that now it's going to be more than 50% non-white children under 18. By 2042, the entire nation will be no majority one race. And so we call this kind of a global trend, you know, global village. And we have six communities in the city of Baltimore that are essentially harbingers to that kind of future reality. Six neighborhoods that have no majority one race.
Which ones?
Patterson Park, North and East, Southeastern, and Orangeville, which is all in the Southeast, and then Charles Village, Berkeley, Midtown, and Brooklyn Curtis Bay.
That's Seema Iyer, Associate Director of the Jacob Franz Institute at the University of Baltimore and leader of the Baltimore Neighborhood Indicators Alliance. We're talking about BNIA's annual profile of the city, Vital Signs 15. What I'm about to ask you may also come from that breakdown of census data, because it seems like there's a surge in dropouts. You point out that of those aged 16 to 19, 81% were either at school or work during the period 2011 to 2015, and that was down.
That was down from 2010. So a disturbing trend that we found for some of our youth, and that was not the only indicator that we found going in potentially the wrong direction. But yeah, it does seem like our youth are not being constructively engaged, not finding opportunities, not finding the things that they need to potentially stay in school or find work potentially after they finish school.
As you pointed out, Vital Signs traces more than 155 streams of data for each of these 55 We call them neighborhoods. The technical name is community statistical areas.
They're a little bit bigger than what people conceive of as their neighborhood, but enough of communities that we can divvy up the city in a manageable number of communities.
So 100.5 kinds of data, and yet from working at it all these years, you have zeroed in on three indicators that you say no neighborhood can afford to ignore.
So the thing that we tell communities, we work with communities, every community gets a community profile of 150 indicators, which is both good information, but then a lot of information. And we focus in on one main indicator and then three things that contribute to that main indicator. And the main indicator is your neighborhood growing or not? And if it's growing too fast, that's when neighborhoods start to feel gentrification, feel the sense of displacement, feel the income rising and the median sales price rising, and you feel like you're getting pushed out. So too fast population change is an issue. And when it's too slow, that means that you're going to see the rise of vacant and abandoned buildings, because the people that leave, there's nobody picking them up behind them. And once we start to think about what are the issues about which neighborhoods are growing and which ones are not growing, three key factors came out from the research that we've been doing and the data itself. The first one is that every neighborhood needs to have a diversity in their housing stock itself. You need to have the apartments, you need to have the townhouses, you need to have higher end, whatever that might look like, so that people of different incomes would choose housing at different price points. And if we have diversity in every single one of our neighborhoods, what our research has shown is it's the best educational outcomes for children, because by definition, the schools themselves will have a diversity of income. So we stop segregation in the housing, you'll stop segregation in the schools, and we'll get better outcome. The second one is vacant and abandoned housing. We've got to get, and our data actually points to a pretty clear exploratory analysis that every neighborhood needs to be at least below 4% vacant and abandoned housing. 4 out of 100 homes. Now, this is a finding that we found for a long time, but the question is, what do we do with this finding, and how do we get communities to try and figure out how to move forward towards 4%? But at least it's a goal that we can try and help both city agencies, nonprofits, communities say, what would our community look like if we're already below 4%? How do we remain below 4%? That means that if a house goes for sale, there's somebody to pick it up. That goes back to the median days in the market. Or if there's too much vacancy, how are we going to build a plan forward where we get down below 4%? So that's the second thing, vacant and abandoned housing. And then the third thing is a little bit possibly counterintuitive, or you would never believe that this was the third thing that I have to tell you, but it was the travel time to work that showed up as being the most negatively correlated indicator to population loss by neighborhood. And once you think about it, the reason why we live where we do is because we have easy access to where we have to go to job, you know, get a job. And once you have a neighborhood that ends up being inaccessible towards work, that's where people start to leave that neighborhood. So we have neighborhoods where a high percentage of the population that work, these are working folks in the neighborhood, that travel more than 45 minutes to go to their job. And once that happens, people are much more likely to potentially move to keep their job, or they're potentially higher likelihood of losing their job because they can't reliably get to their job on time when you have such variability in your how you get to work. And so we've seen, for example, some of our high vacancy neighborhoods are also our high travel time to work neighborhoods, because there's nothing that's providing that kind of impetus for people to move in to the neighborhood itself.
Or, and people who live there have trouble staying.
Have trouble staying.
Because their job is at risk.
So we work with every community on these three indicators. How diverse is your housing stock? Because that gives a realistic opportunity for people of all income levels to live in your neighborhood. What's your vacant and abandoned housing rate? If you're below 4%, you want to stay there. We can tell you exactly how many houses that is. For some of our neighborhoods, it's only 50 houses. But for some of our neighborhoods, it's thousands of properties that they have to come below. And that means that we need all of our resources to try and help deal with the, you know, huge number of the people that are still living there that they have to deal with. And then for travel time to work, it's a combination of things. Some of it is, of course, better transportation and circulation in the city. Some of it is that our workforce training programs focus on actually getting people jobs within 45 minutes of where they live. And then some of it is that we need to get more jobs in the neighborhood itself. so that people have access to opportunities right in their neighborhood.
Very interesting. Seema Iyer of the Baltimore Neighborhood Indicators Alliance at the Jacob France Institute at the University of Baltimore is with us. After a quick break, we're going to talk about what data has to do with arts and a new interactive map that's going live tomorrow. I'm Sheila Cass. Stay tuned.
This is the On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking today about data that helps us understand how Baltimore's many neighborhoods are thriving or not. Seema Iyer of the Baltimore Neighborhood Indicators Alliance at the Jacob France Institute at the University of Baltimore is with us. Seema, I don't often connect data and arts and culture in the same thought in my head, but you told me recently that the more diverse Baltimore becomes, the more important the arts are in pulling neighborhoods together.
Yes, absolutely. So I mentioned that we have now identified six what we might call global cities where there's no majority one race. And that's just one indicator of how diverse all of our neighborhoods are going to keep becoming. Age diversity, racial diversity, ethnic diversity. So we're not all sending our kids to the same school. We're not attending the same faith-based institutions. We're all doing our own thing, and yet we live in the same neighborhood. And the arts and culture are things that bring us together in very inclusive and very non-threatening ways. And yet we learn about each other through the arts and cultures right in our own neighborhoods.
Alice Myatt has joined us. She's had a career as a consultant working with media, arts, and philanthropic organizations. She's past director of media arts for the National Endowment of the Arts, the NEA, and past vice president of programming for the Public Broadcasting Service. And now she's on the board of the Baltimore Office of Promotion and the Arts. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
So, Alice, how did this idea grow that Baltimore needed some kind of interactive tool to connect around arts and culture?
Well, I think underscoring what Seema said about the arts' ability to bring people together, while I was at the NEA, the idea of creative placemaking was really formalized by then-chairman Rocco Landsman. And the research showed that if there is arts activity in a neighborhood, that the neighborhood itself has a higher sense of well-being, that it is safer, that it's healthier, and the notion of creative placemaking has spread across the country. And the question became, well, how do we think about it here in Baltimore? How do we identify what indicators demonstrate arts and culture activity? And then how do we merge that with the indicators that Binya has been collecting over the years so that we can track that the arts and culture activity along with the other indicators that are found at the neighborhood level?
And you've come up with GeoLoom. What is GeoLoom?
GeoLoom is designed to be a map that underscores the community and the cooperation and the cohesion that we can have here in Baltimore. It is geolocation of activities that are specifically placed, and it embraces the idea of weaving the city together in a cohesive fashion.
So you say activities that are located at some place. So this is primarily about arts events?
It's not just events. It's also arts institutions. And it's everything from the large formal institutions like the Baltimore Museum of Art or the American Visionary Art Museum. But it's also the Baltimore Science Fiction Society, a tavern that has an open mic, a coffee shop that has artwork not only for display but also for sale.
Seema, what kind of data make it into GeoLoom?
So that's actually the holy grail for us, because I can tell you like how many vacant and abandoned properties there are and how many crimes were reported in the neighborhood. Those are relatively straightforward data sets for us at the Baltimore Neighborhood Indicators Alliance to be collecting over the last 15 years. But when it comes to art and culture, there's such a broad definition, and you want to make that as inclusive a definition as possible through quantitative measures of art and culture. And so we used some of our expertise in data collection in a reliable way, but then also really broadened who we were collecting data from. So we started about 4 years ago with forays into things like how many people in your neighborhood have a library card. That was a sign of people engaging with the literary arts, with other kinds of cultural relationships that you might have with the library. Then we started with things that the Baltimore Office of Promotion and Arts might have, like how many publicly funded murals there might be in the city of Baltimore, or how many events have been going on in the public right-of-way. So like if somebody does a block party, they have to pull a permit. Well, that's a data set that we can start to pull now from the Department of Transportation. And so we essentially, over the last 2 years, have really curated organizations that have data that we might collect and add to this integrated map. Things like the Baltimore Heritage. They have all kinds of grants that they give for historical reasons. And now you can now see it on the map. So pulling together organizational data that may never have been put together, not only for the organizations themselves, but for communities to see all the things that are, in fact, going on in their neighborhoods to show.
This is On the Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cass speaking with Seema Iyer, Associate Director of the Jacob France Institute at the University of Baltimore and leader of the Baltimore Neighborhood Indicators Alliance, and Alice Myatt, a consultant in the arts who helped shape the interactive map that will be launched tomorrow called GeoLoom. But Alice, is some of the data that is in the map or will be in the map crowdsourced?
Some of it actually is and hopefully will continue to be crowdsourced. So, for example, if you are a proprietor who has a location that offers arts and culture activity, you can put that information on our map. Or if you're an individual artist and you have a studio space and you want people to know that you're there, you're able to upload that to the map. Or if you're an audience member or an event attendee and you've taken photos, you can upload that. And that would be data sourced on the map. So yes, there will be crowdsourced information as well as information that's formally gathered by a number of different organizations that we've partnered with.
So this is not just about me being able to find a cool thing to do on the weekend. I mean, that's part of it. That's not a bad thing. But this is also about artists themselves finding resources and about businesses?
Absolutely. And again, going back to Seema's earlier definition of indicators and what it indicates, the map will also show where there are no arts and culture activities. And it's important to know where the gaps are.
You're talking about arts deserts.
That's exactly right. And hopefully we can be able to close those out, just as we're thinking about how do we close out food deserts.
Seema, how do you expect, what impact do you expect an interactive tool like this to have?
We are very excited to actually be able to tell a much more holistic and inclusive story about all of our neighborhoods. Our neighborhoods are not their crime rate, and we know that, and they're not their vacant and abandoned housing rate, which is what most people come to us for. But they are the coffee shop that people go to read a book or buy something. They are the block party that they have. And this is what every single one of our neighborhoods is doing. And so we know that because we go to the neighborhoods themselves, and we're excited to have a tool that can help them tell that story with us.
Alice, I read in the materials that GeoLoom is experimental, which means it can change. What do you think may happen to it?
What I hope will happen to it is that it will expand. And I hope that the crowdsourcing becomes a key point. And I hope that the users will be as diverse as the population of Baltimore. So it's not just artists and arts organizations, but it's developers, both not-for-profit and for-profit developers. My hope is that businesses use it so that they can find locations that are thriving because there's an arts and culture set of activities that are taking place in that neighborhood. What is really important to say, though, is that as the arts and culture activities expand, that they do not dislocate the people that are there. And there's often a correlation between arts and culture and gentrification in the most negative sense. And what we want to make sure that happens throughout the city is that the arts and culture activities are lifted up and recognized, and the people who are actively engaged in those activities are recognized, but that there is not displacement because the neighborhoods improve.
I want to make sure I'm envisioning this right. Is GeoLoom an app that I'm going to download into my phone, or is it a website?
Yes, you can do that. There's a website. You'll be able to use it on your mobile phone or on your tablet. We have made it platform agnostic so that it can go with you wherever you are.
Well, thank you for telling us about it.
Thanks for having us.
Seema Iyer is Associate Director of the Jacob France Institute at the University of Baltimore and leader of the Baltimore Neighborhood Indicators Alliance. Alice Myatt is a consultant in the arts who helped shape the interactive map that will be launched tomorrow called GeoLoom. Tomorrow is also Baltimore Day to Day, a whole day of seminars and discussions and work groups about data. It will take place at the University of Baltimore School of Business from 8:30 to 4:30. We have more information at the On the Record page at WYPR.org, as well as links to information about Vital Signs 15 and the new interactive map, GeoLoom. I'm Sheila Cast. Glad you've been with us on The Record. Come back tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to this segment of On The Record with Sheila Cast. You can catch the show on the radio Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 10 a.m. on 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station. And you can support On The Record and all the other public radio programs that WYPR brings to you. Just click the donate link at the top of WYPR.org. And thanks.